to the Well-Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Anne.
And I'm Hallie.
And we are librarians with the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. Before we get to this week's topic, we'd like to thank everyone for their support and feedback from our first episode. This week, we'll be talking about what to read when you finish the best-selling novel, The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins. So, we both read this book.
Yes, we have both read Girl on the Train, and I think we have different feelings about Girl on the Train. Because I really liked it.
Okay.
And how did you feel about it?
I thought it was really enjoyable, but I thought it was overrated. I felt like all of the buzz that I had been hearing up to the publishing of it, which was insane buzz, it just didn't really work for me in the end. But I enjoyed reading it.
Okay.
I just thought that by saying it's next Gone Girl,
yes,
set up some expectations,
yes,
that were not really real for me.
I think I agree with that. I think it helped. I read it as an advanced reader's copy before it came out. And so the buzz had definitely started, but a lot of what I had heard about it came from other librarians, less than on the Today Show or whatever.
So
I think that sets a different sort of expectation if I'm hearing about it from other librarians than if I'm hearing from it in the general public consciousness that it's so good in the next Gone Girl. So I was pleasantly surprised when I read it because I thought it really sucked me in, and I thought it was just, I was never quite sure exactly what was happening or who was telling the truth and, you know, who you could trust. And so I really enjoyed it. I think that can backfire, all that hype ahead of time or, you know, as a book is out. So I'm glad I had a chance to read it before it got to that fever pitch that it has gotten to, because I feel like I would have had maybe the same reaction you did, that it wasn't quite... Because I really liked Gone Girl.
Yeah, I loved Gone Girl.
Yeah, I really liked Gone Girl. And I think that anytime you try to compare a book to something that you loved, or anything to something that you loved, it has a chance to fail.
Right, definitely. Know? Well, and I also read it, I read it right before it was published, so it wasn't, I read an advanced reading copy, but not very advanced. And I had done a lot of discussions with librarians online where they talked about how it was the greatest book that they had read, and the holds were going to be the size of Gone Girl holds, and that's they do have incredible holds on this book in our system.
Right.
But I think because people talk about, whenever people talk about twists now in books, it sort of ruins things for me, because I just start thinking of the possibilities, and there are a finite number of possibilities that you can have in what's going on in this book.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish that people would just keep their mouths shut about
twists. I know. Oh, I'll have to keep that in mind as I describe these next books.
Exactly. I have lots of twist books.
But I think that I like, anytime there's a book that captures everybody's attention, I love the fact that people are picking it up that maybe wouldn't ordinarily be reading. I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk about 50 Shades of Grey and books like that. People have opinions about how valuable it is as literature, but I don't care. As long as people are enjoying reading, why would you ever judge what people are getting enjoyment out of? So so it's something like this where it becomes a lot of people picking it up or hearing about it that may not otherwise pick up a book, or only pick up maybe a book or two a year. I just love that. I love when people get into something that we love.
Yeah.
You know, we do it all the time. We read lots of books, but I don't know. So I feel like the quality of it doesn't really matter, although I did think that this was a very good book. But I just like the fact that everybody is interested in it and talking about it. And maybe, like, we're about to list off some books that we think would be good if you liked Girl on the Train to continue on reading. And, you know, maybe they pick it up and really enjoy it. Now they want another book that's like it. Same with...
Yeah, anything that brings people in
and
helps them discover how much fun reading can be is great in my eyes. I think for me, Gone Girl had so much psychology that was really interesting.
Yes.
And so I didn't find that in this book, which... I think if I just had not had the Gone Girl comparisons, I would have been fine with reading it and had a great time, because a lot of other books that I have on my list are that same type of thriller where there's all kinds of twists and people that you can't trust in it. But and so I definitely enjoy that genre.
Yeah.
I just was kind of expecting something different from the way people are talking about this.
Well, and it's occurring to me that we're talking about this as if everybody has already read Girl on the Train, and perhaps everybody has not read Girl on the Train. So
and
you
maybe
want to
we
give
should
a brief...
say, well, and we probably should say that there may be some...
Yes,
are listening to this.
That's true. Yes. So if you haven't read Girl on the Train and don't care about spoilers, then you can keep listening. But if you do care about spoilers, you might want to wait to listen to this until after you read Red Girl on the Train.
Right.
So the biggest thing about Girl on the Train is that there's a three main characters, really, but the primary one is Rachel, and she is an alcoholic, I think that's fair to say. She drinks so much that she often blacks out and doesn't remember things, and she has lost her job, but she continues to take a train every single morning and afternoon as if she still has that job, so she's the same route. And there's a stop on the train where every day she sees a couple in their home or on their patio, and she has developed a whole life for them in her head, and that they're basically like the perfect couple. And then one day she sees something that indicates that they're not the perfect couple, and then not long after that it comes out that the woman in the couple has disappeared. And Rachel starts having flickers of memories that she may have been there that night the woman disappeared. Am I telling this okay so far?
Yeah, and this all comes out throughout the course of the book.
Yes,
kind of the basic premise is that everything is, it's they're all strangers to each other,
right?
And then you sort of find out that there's more to the story.
There's more to
than you hadn't known at the very beginning.
Because Rachel is the one sort of guiding the story at first, and because her memories aren't reliable, her whole story is not reliable.
Right.
This is a whole genre of psychological thriller of the unreliable narrator, that they're telling a story that you cannot count on as being the actual true story, which I think is some of our recommendations here are going to follow that same
line.
And
I think you mentioned, and I feel the same way, that this is just, I can read books about unreliable narrators nonstop.
Yes.
They're so much fun to read.
They are so much fun to read. And especially because it keeps you guessing the whole time.
Yeah.
But you also can find a very sympathetic character and question whether they're not, they're even sympathetic.
Right.
Because they're the ones in control of how the story is being told.
Right.
And so Rachel in Girl on the Train is kind of a mess. And you have feelings about her as a person, but then she's also telling the story that you're very involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anything else we want to say about Girl on the Train?
There's a lot of flipping back between characters.
There are lots
of people, which I noticed as I was putting together my list that every book I picked has alternate narrators.
Oh, yeah, so mine do too, yes.
Maybe it's the same narrator, but at different points in time.
Yes.
But there's always that alternating chapter going on, so it's a really popular motif in this type of book.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing to do because you learn information as you're going along, and then you discover truths that you thought were not truths. It's just such a fun technique to use.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it definitely heightens the suspense,
yeah,
I think.
Definitely. Do you want to tell us what you thought was a good read-alike?
Sure. So my first one is Reconstructing Amelia by Kimberly McCreight. It's spelled McCreight. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. Have you read this one?
I haven't. I've checked it out probably 5 times.
Have you?
It just gets retorted.
Well, you should add it to your list. This one is about a woman who is a single mother and a very busy litigation lawyer. Her name is Kate, and she has a 15-year-old daughter who she gets a phone call one day while she is at work that her daughter has been caught cheating and is going to be suspended from her school.
Okay.
And this is completely unlike her daughter, anything her daughter would do. So she drops everything and she rushes to the school. And by the time she gets there, they greet her with the news that in that intervening time, her daughter has jumped off the roof and committed suicide.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So of course she is devastated, as any mother would be, and going about the routine of setting up the details for the funeral and, you know, everything that goes on in sort of just this haze of grief. And she gets an anonymous text that says, "She didn't jump." And so, as a lawyer, she has that tendency to try to dig into the truth anyway, and because it's her daughter, it's heightened. And so she starts piecing together from Facebook entries or emails and text messages, and there's a school gossip blog that she goes back and reads, and tries to put together what was going on in Amelia's life that led to the events of that day, and whether or not she jumped or was maybe pushed or fell or what happened. And then, as we said, in alternating chapters, we have Amelia telling her own story of the time leading up to that day. As these pieces are coming together, there are little bits of information that you're getting as the story goes along, that all these current day topics are coming up, like bullying, what happens with online privacy, and how much teenagers, or young people, I should say, or people in general, maybe put out about their lives online, and how much is available to the public, and how things can be skewed based on what other people say. Right. You know, sometimes it's not like it's the truth that's coming out, but it's a perception of the truth. And,
right.
and so it's a really suspenseful story, and it's also got a lot of heart to it because you're dealing with a mother who has lost her daughter, and that never goes away. I mean, that happens right at the beginning. Her daughter is gone. So there's that element to it. And I just really enjoyed it. I thought it brought a little bit of, like you said, the alternating viewpoints of Girl on the Train with that suspenseful quality. There's an unreliable narrator aspect to it because you have Amelia telling her own story, and you also have the bits and pieces of the online social media evidence that's being popped up.
Right.
So it's just a really strong story. In fact, she has a new book out, and one of my coworkers read it, and she said she liked it even better than Reconstructing Amelia.
Oh,
so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But that's one I would definitely recommend if you like Girl on the Train, because it has a lot of the same elements, but a very different sort of a story.
Right.
So it'll keep you reading and turning the pages, but with a totally different frame to the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun when there's a book that they almost are going, like, one person's story is moving forward and another person's story in the future is sort of
right.
moving backward.
Right. They're going to meet.
At a certain point, they're
exactly. Right.
Love.
Yeah. They're going to meet at the day that it all
yeah.
happened. So, yeah.
It's finally really find out the truth.
Yeah. And there's a theme in books about teenagers and these sorts of stories that they're not always very nice. So it always just makes me happy to be beyond that. I just read another book that was similar, which I'm not going to talk about because I might use it in a future podcast, but it just made me really glad not to be involved
yeah.
in a lot of that stuff.
I think about that all the time of how lucky I was to not be a teenager
yes.
when
oh.
Facebook
oh,
existed.
Oh, I know.
I don't want to date myself, but I
yes.
was
yes.
not a teenager.
Me neither. Me neither.
And so I don't know how parents do it now.
I know.
The internet existed when I was a teenager, but it wasn't pervasive the way
yes.
it is now. And so there's so much that parents are thinking about now
yeah.
that my parents and
yeah.
generations before never
yeah.
had to consider. And
well, you know,
crazy.
I think all teenagers make mistakes or make decisions that aren't
right.
the best, or things that you look back on would say, I probably shouldn't have done that. And you're younger than I am, but when both of us were growing up, we didn't have the whole world witnessing
right.
those things, or future employers
right.
seeing those
things. It wasn't
things.
Recorded.
It wasn't recorded in perpetuity.
Right.
You know, we have photographs, like physical
yeah.
photographs
from what I have from when I was a teenager.
And, you know, stories that people would tell, but it was just a whole different
yeah.
situation. And so there's the premise of this is just scary to begin with, you know, that
right.
you have all of that evidence that's out there about this girl's life just from social media.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the authors, and I think the media in general, people are really thinking about this now. And
yes.
this thing that was fun and exciting, and
yes.
now people are thinking of the consequences
yes.
a lot more often. And
yeah.
that's, I think it's really interesting when you can watch society sort of shifting
I know.
In the way that we have in the past
yes.
10 years. So, and I like that literature is examining that.
Yes.
It's really fun.
Yes, I agree with that.
So,
all right, talk to me about your next one.
So I picked Elizabeth is Missing by Emma Healy. And I picked this one specifically because they both Girl on the Train and Elizabeth is Missing feature unreliable narrators, which we've talked about quite a bit at this point. So the difference to me in these two books is that a lot of unreliable narrators in other books that I found are dishonest, and they're purposely dishonest, and you kind of find that out as you're going along that it's not a good person. And in this case, they just have faulty memories. So in Girl on the Train, Rachel is an alcoholic, and so she isn't, I mean, she's making decisions that are maybe not the best decisions, but she isn't purposely trying to mislead the reader. And in Elizabeth is Missing, the main character is an elderly woman with dementia.
Oh,
and so, so the setup of the book is that she's trying to live on her own, and she has a daughter that comes and takes care of her, but for the most part she's living on her own, and she becomes convinced that this other elderly friend of hers, Elizabeth, is missing, and that she's in danger, but she can't get anyone to listen to her. So she tries to tell her daughter that this is going on, and she tries to tell Elizabeth's son that there's something going on, but because she can't remember their previous interaction, she doesn't remember that she's talked about this
oh, wow.
to everyone many, many times, including the police.
Okay.
So the son comes off as really abrasive and even dangerous because he's so tired of this, but to Maude, the main character in the book, he might be someone who's done something horrible to his own mother. So there's this constant uncertainty of how people are actually reacting to her, if it's real or if it's just her bad memory. So in order to help herself with this, she writes these notes, both so that she can survive in her own home. So she'll write things like, don't turn on the oven. But then because she has dementia, she thinks, oh, someone else wrote that. Or or why would I not turn on my own oven? So she's constantly questioning her sort of her sound decisions earlier when she was lucid. But then she also will write down things about Elizabeth's disappearance. So then maybe she'll forget about it for a few days, but then she'll find this note that says, talk to the police about Elizabeth, and then it will all come back, and she decides that they'd have to get on this case again. So that's sort of what propels the story forward, are these little notes she writes to herself. But at the same time this is going on, they have flashback chapters to when Maude was a teenager, I think, maybe early 20s, but she's a young woman at this point, and she's living in World War II London, or post-World War II London, and her sister had gone missing, and so there are these dual mysteries that are going on that both involve a missing person. And it's really interesting to read because the sister, the chapters that deal with her sister's just disappearance are really lucid, and then the chapters that are set in the current day, even within the same paragraph, she'll forget things. So she'll be writing, you'll have the author writing her thoughts, and you'll have all this her train of thought going along, and then suddenly she's forgotten what she wrote about or what she was thinking two sentences earlier. So it's really, really interesting to read, and just really heartbreaking to read. Yeah. In a lot of ways. So I think that you get the mystery elements, which are really, really fun and really compelling, but then you also get this really compelling look at what it means to age and how people handle the elderly, which I'm so terrified for.
Yes, I know.
It was really, really interesting to read. And there are so many dangers that are involved in her everyday life of just existing in her own home.
And you said she lives by herself. She doesn't have anybody.
Yeah. At the beginning, she lives by herself. And then later on through the book, her daughter takes her in. But the impatience that her family feels for her and how terrifying that must be to feel like, this is going on, my friend is missing, I have to find out what's happening, but no one is listening to me.
Yeah.
Which has been looked at in other movies and things with, I can't think of an example right now, but I know I've seen movies where there's a person that's just deemed crazy or even like a time travel kind of thing where someone will know the future and no one will listen to them, but then to have a situation that's really common in modern day life of people that aren't listened to because they're elderly. So so I really enjoyed it. I read it in two batches, so with kind of a space in between, because I read an advanced reading copy and then I lost it, so I had to wait for it to be published. So the mystery part, I don't remember as well as that impression, but I remember really liking the mystery. I just now, in retrospect, I'm not remembering all of it as well as
that happens to me sometimes. Actually, a lot.
Yeah,
I know overall themes that I just finished a book at the end of last week that dealt with Alzheimer's, and it's just heartbreaking what the family goes through, what the person goes through, how you could see the frustration that comes out. Like you were saying, she keeps saying the same thing. She's had these conversations before, and how that could be frustrating for the person she's talking to, but frustrating for her because she doesn't know that she's had that conversation. So there are a whole lot of layers there.
Yeah.
What's happening.
And it's kind of similar to Girl on the Train too, because Rachel is often not taken seriously because of her alcoholism.
Yeah, people just write her off, right? It sounds like maybe in your case, the main character, they're writing her off just assuming, you know, she has dementia, she doesn't know what she's talking about. When that's not necessarily true.
Right.
Yeah.
Although in some cases it is true.
Right, exactly. As you were talking, it reminded me, you said about leaving notes for herself, and we talked about last week, Before I Go to Sleep, which would also be a good girl on the train read like.
Yeah.
So if you didn't listen to our episode last week, go listen to it, because that's a good read
to if you're on the train. I feel like we both like to read psychological thrillers so much, so I'm worried that we're going to always have this psychological thriller.
There will always be one thrown in there. When in doubt, read a psychological thriller.
So much fun.
Can't help it. All right, you want to hear about my next one?
Yes, please.
This is The Kind Worth Killing by Peter Swanson, and it is about a man who, his name is Ted. He is on a flight home from London to Boston, and he has a few drinks and starts chatting up his seatmate on the airplane, and they start playing a game of truth where they promise that because they're strangers, they're never going to see each other again. And the alcohol is flowing. They may as well tell each other the most intimate details of their lives and just get them off their chest, and then this will be a fun game. They're never going to see each other.
Sounds like a horrible idea.
It's a horrible idea. Why would you do this? You know that this is not what's going to happen. So they're playing this game, and he reveals that he is pretty sure his wife is cheating on him.
Okay.
And sort of half jokingly, he says, you know, I could kill her because she's cheating on me. Mm-hmm. And the woman sitting next to him, her name is Lily, says, well, I can help with that.
Oh, wow.
They have this conversation as if, you know, this is actually going to be something they could potentially do. And he, in the back of his mind, is sort of thinking the whole time, like, this is just made up, right?
Right.
Like, we're not really going to do this because we're strangers and we're drunk. And but then they set a time and a date to meet to agree that if either of them has second thoughts, they just don't have to show up. And that's all they need to do to never have to see each other again. And the day comes and they both meet and they're both there.
Oh, wow.
And then this is one, and I know I said at the beginning I was going to try not to say this, but truly there are so many twists in this one. Because you think you have the basic outline of how the story is going to go, and then again you get multiple viewpoints because then you're learning about his wife and the affair that she is having and the person she's having the affair with, and then his perspective, and then the woman on the plane and who she is and who she's pretending to be perhaps,
yeah.
and who you can believe and who you can trust and who the characters can trust,
yeah,
among each other. It's fascinating, and there's so many, many turns to this story. I did not predict the ending at all. Like,
oh,
you said earlier that you spend the whole time when there are twists thinking, you know, what are the possibilities?
Right.
This is one where it just keeps changing what the possibilities are, so you aren't sure as you go along what the potential outcomes could be, because it's just constantly changing,
yeah,
who you can believe and who you think is kind of a good guy and who's not a good,
okay,
guy. In fact, they're all generally pretty unlikable people, I,
uh-huh,
would say, much like in Gone Girl, you don't necessarily like those main characters, mm-hmm, I would say. Or Girl on the Train, really. I don't know that you like those characters so much. But they never necessarily redeem themselves. Like, that's part of the talent of this book, I think, is make you want to read more about the characters that you don't necessarily like. You definitely would not want to know these people in real life. You would not be, you know, these are not people you would want to be friends with. You would not want to be married to these people. They are constantly lying to each other. And they're always deceitful. You can never believe what they're saying on the surface. And it's so suspenseful. It just definitely keeps you turning the pages because you can't quite ever grasp where the story is going, or if you think you know where it's going, the next thing you know, it's taken a turn in it and it's going in a new direction.
So that's really, really cool.
It's really good. And I know a lot of people that have read it really felt the same way about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, for some reason, I don't think it's gotten quite the notoriety that Girl on the Train has, although it came out around the same time.
Right.
Think, right?
It's
very recent. Yeah. I think it's been out at most 6 months. I don't even know if it's been out that long. So it's definitely one that if you like the twisty nature of Girl on the Train, where when you're following one character's storyline, you're sort of with that person and thinking, okay, this is what's going on, and then it switches to a different storyline and you're like, oh no, wait, maybe this is what's going on, or this is what happened. That's got that element to it for sure.
That's cool.
Yes, it was really good.
I've heard a lot of buzz from librarians on The Kind of Worth Killing as well, and I think that Girl on the Train just sort of overshadowed it with,
yes,
I don't know if the marketing was but it sounded really cool from the description.
And there's definitely room for both of them because they're different stories for sure, but they've got the same suspenseful,
mm-hmm,
page-turning kind of feeling to them, and that psychological suspense of these characters that aren't doing very good things with their lives.
Yeah. Why is that so fascinating to read about?
I don't know.
It's so fun. Well, the book that I picked is similar in the unlikable narrator,
mm-hmm,
vein. So I picked it because it's called Luckiest Girl Alive by Jessica Knoll, and this also just came out in, I think, last month.
Mm-hmm.
It's really recent. So I picked it because a lot of the people that I've heard talk about disliking Girl on the Train talked about how much they didn't like Rachel, the main character, and how she's difficult and she makes poor decisions, and she's an alcoholic, but then she also is obsessed with her ex-husband, and so she just does all these things that you want her to not do.
Mm-hmm.
And make better decisions, but I don't think the author is necessarily making you want to like her. I don't think that was necessarily the intention of the author. So I like the book for that reason. But then in Luckiest Girl Alive, then the main character is named Annie, and she's just a classic mean girl, but a lot darker. The very first page, you know that she's a star character because she's registering for her wedding with her fiance, and she imagines stabbing him as they're registering. So, and not just like kind of a playful, this is driving me nuts kind of way, but actually,
like legitimately,
and talking in detail about how she would do this. Wow. So it's first page, you know, this isn't kind of a happy book.
Right.
Like all the books we're talking about, but it flips back and forth from modern day Ani, mm-hmm. who is a writer for a famous women's magazine. And then it goes back to, and she's living in New York City. And then it flips back to her freshman year in high school when she went by Tiffany. Mm-hmm. She was in a private school on the Main Line in Philadelphia. So it's sort of that same device that we talked about earlier where you see Tiffany moving forward in time and the modern day Ani, even though she knows all this information, it's not like she's discovering things, but her looking back at this okay. event that happened and when they'll converge. The book is really kind of about presentation and how people choose to present themselves to other people, especially how women choose to present themselves to each other. So Tiffany, as a teenager, she and her mother are obsessed with sort of fitting in with these really wealthy people that live on the Main Line. Mm-hmm. And they have money, but they're kind of new money. And so they're always sort of presenting this image of, we have more money than we actually do, or we have older money than we actually do, and everyone knows better. So everyone sort of treats her badly because even though she is able to get into this prestigious private school, she isn't one of the chosen.
Okay. You know?
So, and then current day Ani, as this editor or writer for this women's magazine, she's finally achieved all of these things. She's very cool and very knows all the right brands. She's not really aspiring in the way that her mother still is aspiring to pretend to know these things, but she actually is living this life, and she's engaged to this like hedge fund manager, and she's just very, very, very wealthy at this point. But she's still very, very aware of status and very aware of her money and her place in the social sort of scheme. And so the book is kind of looking at how women are presenting each other or presenting themselves and presenting to each other, but also really looking at how men view them and how they have these the sense that you have to be a certain way for men, even though that isn't really what you want to be and what's your truth. It's just the way that it has to be because men run things. So instead of having the, like, in typical chick lit, you have books where women are writers in New York City and they write from some magazine, and then they have this kind of playful life, and it has all this name dropping and brand dropping, but they sort of make it look effortless in a way, and they've already arrived. But in this book, you see how calculated everything is. And so everything that she's doing it's not playful, it's not fun, it's not happy, it's I have to do this because this is what the result will be, and I'm going to do anything to get there. So she will do terrible things to her coworkers. She'll undermine people all the time. She just has all these skills that she sort of learned while she's going to this private school. And so as you're reading the book, and these things are sort of coming together of what happened, and I don't want to tell at all of what actually happened or hint at what leads up to it, it went places I had no idea it would go. And I don't get surprised by books anymore. Mm-hmm. So even though there are clues that are kind of laid throughout the book of what could happen, I never pieced them together that it could go to that extreme.
Oh, right.
So I read it on vacation last week, and I read it on the plane, and then I read it every night, and I kept thinking, but I need to go to bed because I've got things to do in the morning and I really want to do fun things, but I kept wanting to read this book because it just is crazy.
There are so many
crazy things that happen.
It sounds so good. That's on my list. In fact, I'm waiting for the library to get a copy, which we have ordered one, but it's not arrived yet. And I'm just, every single day I keep checking to see if it's there yet, because I've heard some good things and it sounds really fascinating.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun. I guess I like my thrillers to be not just the story, but also sort of examine some psychology in there and why we make choices and sort of how people interact with each other, which is why I like Gone Girl so much. And this, I'm not saying this is as good as Gone Girl. I don't think it is, but it still has some of those same thinking where you're looking at her thought process and you see how much thought is going into all these choices she's making, and they're crazy choices that she's making. So it's, I thought it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
So for my last pick for this section, I have a book called We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. And this is one that you definitely benefit from knowing as little about as possible.
Right.
In fact, if I didn't even have to describe it at all and could just say, go read it, I would do that, because I really feel like it is the best if you don't know anything. In fact,
right.
The marketing campaign when it first came out was pretty much that. Like, we're not going to tell you anything about this book. It just read it.
Yeah.
And it worked really well because I think a lot of people read it and really liked it and were taken by surprise of what the whole story was. But I'll give you the basic bare bones outline,
yeah,
and then just hopefully you can trust me to go read this book. It's a teen book. It is marketed as young adult, but I think everybody can enjoy it, adult or teen. It's about a young girl named Cadence. She is 17 years old, and she's the oldest grandchild of a very prestigious family. They have a lot of money, and they are so wealthy. They have a private island just for their family off the coast of Massachusetts.
Awesome.
I am. And when the novel opens, Cadence hasn't been to the island in 2 years, and the reason is that there was some sort of accident that happened that summer. They spent every summer there, and that particular summer, there was an accident that she was involved in. It was very mysterious. She doesn't remember anything that happened. She gets terrible, debilitating migraines, and nobody in her family will talk about it. It's like shut down. If she ever tries to bring it up, it's like, we do not talk about this. And she is trying to piece together exactly what happened as the summer goes along. There are three other kids on the island that are about her age, that are, two of them are her cousins, and then one of them is the son of somebody that her aunt is in a relationship with. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've read it, but he's not part of the family, but he is, has been there all along.
Yeah.
And so it's like he's one of them, one of these four, and they all are referred themselves and are referred to as the Liars, which is where the title comes from. There's a little bit of King Lear dynamic, I would say, that goes on between the wealthy grandfather and his children. There are three daughters, and about who's going to get which house on the island. It's a very sort of like power struggle sort of situation there. And so you have that going on, these family dynamics, as well as the mystery of what happened 2 summers ago to Cadence and why nobody wants to talk about it and why she has not come back for these 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all I'm going to say. Now, I know you read this too.
Yes.
Is there anything else you would add to that?
No, it's a good summary. I think that I liked that the book also examines a lot about class,
yeah,
and even race.
Yes.
To some degree, but class is definitely, this isn't a book that's just interested in looking at shiny rich people and their,
right,
shiny rich lives.
Right.
There's a lot more depth to it.
There is a lot more depth. And I would say that it's not a sense of, this fabulous life that they lead, that,
right,
they get to have this island. I know we just laughed a minute ago about like, that would be so nice,
right,
to have your own island. But this sort of examines the fact that maybe it's not so nice,
right,
to have this,
right,
your own island. What goes along with the family infighting that might come along with,
right,
that, or the social aspects of that.
Did this win an award? Was this a Prince?
I think this was a
honor?
Honor, maybe. I don't think it won the Prince.
It didn't
it
win
Prince.
The Prince.
Yeah.
I know it was, I wanted it to win,
yes,
something.
Yes.
So
I know. Maybe it was just,
yeah,
hopeful thinking. But yeah, it was, I think it had to have won something.
Yeah, I can't remember now that if it was,
I
know that it was,
yeah,
very, very popular and very, very well regarded.
Yeah, it came out, I'm pretty sure, in 2014.
Yeah.
And so I know it did make a lot of best of the year,
yeah,
lists, for sure, when it came out. And I just want to encourage again, like, you don't have to be, even though it is a teen book, there's a lot to like about this and,
right,
and get out of it, even if you aren't a teen. I think that she in general, as an author, I think writes a lot of great,
yeah,
novels that appeal to teens, but you can thoroughly enjoy them as an adult. I think I've read by her, I've really, really liked. But this sort of took it to a whole new level. This was a bit of a departure from other things that she had written.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would say.
I've only read this one. I haven't read,
yeah,
book.
She's wrote another one called,
I know what you're thinking of. But
Disreputable History of Frankie Landau,
yes,
Banks.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good. That is so good. It's about women and the patriarchy and kind of,
oh, awesome,
the upheaval of that all set in a high school. And a,
oh,
secret society,
like, so
in a high,
fun,
school. And it's so good. So she's just fabulous. I really like her. But this one, like I said, I feel like I'm not giving enough information to entice people to read it. I just want people to go and read it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you give away any more about the story, it starts taking away from the discovery that happens as you're reading the,
right,
story. Yeah.
I definitely,
so,
agree. But, and I think that the writing is just really, really beautiful.
Yes, yes.
There are things that she writes at the beginning that she mirrors later in the book. And I really, really enjoyed the,
yeah,
writing on this. It's a great book, but we can't talk about it.
I know, we can't talk about
it. So hard.
Everybody go and read it, and then come back and tell us that you liked it, and we can talk about it.
Okay, so my last book is called The Furies by Natalie Haynes, And I picked this because both the Furies and the Girl on the Train feature made-up realities. So in The Girl on the Train, then Rachel watches this couple from the train. She makes up this entire story with names for them, this huge backstory, their current lives. She comes up with all kinds of information for them. And in The Furies, there's a character, and I'm not going to tell who because it will ruin things for the book, but there's a character that views a situation that's going on not in this person's life and makes up what they think should be the reality and then acts on that. So it's also difficult to talk about. I don't want to tell too much information like in We Were Liars because there's a lot of discovery that happens in this book. But the basic premise is that there is a woman named Alex whose fiance dies. And as the book goes on, you kind of find out the circumstances of how he died, but it's basically a tragic thing that happens to him. And so she moves to Edinburgh to get away from, I think she's living in London, and she goes to start kind of a new life and a new chapter for herself. And so she takes this job teaching drama at a school for students that have been expelled from all the other schools in town. So they're really rough students. And she becomes close with this group of teens that I think they're considered the worst of these kids. And she starts to teach them Greek tragedy. And in theory, that seems like a terrible idea to me. Because Greek tragedy is all about retribution and justice and vengeance. And so these kids really latch onto this because that's sort of how they see the world, and that's how they've been treated and how their family lives have gone. So they become really entranced by these stories, and they're really enthralled by them. And so Alex feels like she's reaching out to them, and she's doing this great job by making them excited about something that isn't beating up other kids, and so she's really thrilled with this. But then as she's kind of mediating these discussions that they're having about these plays, then she becomes worried that they're taking these stories too seriously. And so she doesn't feel like they don't see the difference between reality and how life is played out in these Greek tragedies. Well, at the same time that the tragedies are really speaking to them, and they find that they give voice to the frustrations in their lives, they also are not mature enough to realize that you don't have a huge bloodbath at the end of the play. So, which is interesting because I think in a lot of ways teens sort of have a similar view of the world, even if they're not troubled teens, but there's that feeling of you're out of control of your life. There's a sense of destiny that you have to fulfill, but there's all these things that are acting on you that you don't have the ability to make choices with your own body, with your own mind. Everyone is making these choices for you. So I think they really resonate with teens in general, but with this particular group of teens, it's not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know this going into the book that something bad happens. Okay. So I'm not giving anything away there, but it's more of that alternating chapter thing where you're just waiting to see how it comes together. And this book didn't get a lot of attention. I got it as an advanced copy probably last summer, I think. And I picked reading it because I loved reading Greek tragedy in college and in high school, which I'm not saying I thought that the world was full of this and we needed to wait for gods to come save us from our husbands and things like that. But I remember being really bored by Shakespeare when I was in high school and college. And I mean, Shakespeare's great, but it didn't really speak to me. And then we got to Greek tragedy and the writing was so amazing. And it was like watching this beautiful character study, and then there'd be this crazy action movie in the middle of it, and I thought it was so fascinating. And so when I read this book, it kind of brought back that feeling of discovering Greek tragedy, and sort of in the same way that these students are learning about this topic where they had never really been told about it before, and just getting really excited about it, but then it has this dark twist. So I liked it because both for that reason and also just the way that people can sort of be delusional about things, and I know I've talked about that in our last podcast of when you have a book where you know something bad is really coming toward you, and you're careening towards this disaster, but you just want to see how it gets there. And so in this case, watching how this character makes up a story to fit with what they think should be happening in the world, and then it's not going to turn out well. So.
That sounds so good. Yeah, I don't know if I've even... I think maybe I've heard of it because I can kind of picture the cover, which is something that our patrons always come in and they're like, I'm looking for a red cover.
Yeah.
But it's got a green cover, I think.
With the shadows.
Yeah. So I remember seeing the cover, but I don't think I ever knew anything about it. So that sounds really, really good.
I have it as one of my staff picks at the library, yeah. And so it's kind of, I see it going out pretty regularly, which is fun, but it had a different name in, it was published in the UK, and it had a different name in the UK, so I don't know if it was more popular over there or what, but I just thought it was a really fun book, and I think I even gave it 5 stars on my review, which I'm not saying it's the greatest book ever written, or I just really
liked
it.
Oh yeah, I'm going to have to read that one.
Yeah, it was fun. That brings us to the end of our Roll on Train discussion. Hopefully we've given you some good ideas on some other things to read. There are lots and lots of other Girl on the Train read-alikes that we could come up with. So
I know this was one where we had to definitely limit ourselves on what we talked about, because there were so many options.
But it's a great thing. So our next final segment is what we're reading this week. So Hallie, tell me about your reading this week.
I was planning on talking about one book until yesterday, when I had a bit of a trip in the car, about 4 hours, and so I started listening to a new audiobook, and I thought, well, wait, now I have to talk about this, because it sort of fits in with our theme. It's not so much a Girl on the Train read-alike, but it's sort of the first book I talk about, Reconstructing Amelia, a read-alike for that. So it's tangentially a Girl on the Train read-alike.
Sure.
It's called Finding Jake by Brian Reardon, and it is about a man who is a stay-at-home dad. His wife is a successful attorney, and when they first found out that she was pregnant, they decided that he was sort of in a stalled career, and her career was shooting upwards, and so they decided he would stay home, and she would work, and he has raised 2 kids, and they're both in high school, and one day there is a shooting at the high school, and of course, everybody panics, and all the parents rush to the high school, and news is trickling out that there have been, I think it's 12 or 13 students killed, and the shooter has died, and they're waiting for their son and their daughter to come, and their daughter comes, and then they're still waiting and still waiting and still waiting for their son to come, and the police pull them aside, and it is evident that their son is missing. They don't know where their son is.
Oh, wow.
And his name is Jake. As the story goes along, and this isn't too far into the story, because I've only listened to half, so I can't give away too much about it, but this is all in the pretty early portion of the story, it comes out that they believe that their son was involved in the shooting. It was his friend who was a shooter, and that there are varying reports of what happened, but that people are sort of assuming, because they were friends, that Jake was involved, and that because he's missing and nobody can find him, that he has, you know how this goes. Like, the press immediately jumps onto that, and everybody just assumes, like, there's no pure evidence, but it's just they're assuming that he's involved. So the story goes between, again, alternate storylines here, that there's the father, Simon, his experiences, he's reflecting on raising Jake from the time he was a baby, and then it alternates back and forth between then and then the day of the shooting and after that. And so you're seeing a lot of things when he's reflecting, both on Jake as a child, and you're spending the whole time as you're reading, or as I am listening, thinking, are there signs here that this kid is going to turn into a shooter? Or are there signs that he was just an innocent bystander? Are there signs that, you know, what is happening? What's going to happen? But there's also a little bit of a story about how being a stay-at-home dad is not the norm. You know, it's the cultural zigzag from what, you know, most, many times the mother stays home with the kids, and there's a lot of doubt that goes along with the father raising the kids on his own, not among, you know, the community, but he has a lot of doubt. Like, it doesn't necessarily come naturally to him. It's not an inherent thing that he knows exactly what to do with his kids. He's always questioning if he's doing the right thing, if he's raising them correctly, if he's making the right decisions. So, you know, he is, as he's looking for his son, worried about his son, questioning what happened, questioning how well he knew his son, he's also questioning about the job that he did raising his son, and if he should have done something differently, or if he did the wrong things. And so there are specific moments that he picks out that he made decisions on, sort of how to parent, like those teachable moments. And as I said, I'm only halfway through, so I don't even know how it turns out, but so far it's gripping, and it's very well paced. You're spending some time in his memories of raising Jake, and then some time with the day of, and it's like, it never feels like too much time either place, and it's very fascinating. So I highly recommend it. It's great so far.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, it's really good.
When you started talking about it, I remembered hearing about it, but it's not something that's like a a household name.
Right, yeah, so. Exactly. And, you know, it sounds dark from the premise that there's a school shooting, but it doesn't feel that way to me at all. I mean, it's not focusing on that as much. Like, there's a book called We Need to Talk About Kevin, yeah. which is about a similar topic, and that is dark. I mean, that makes you question your faith in humanity. And this is not that way. I mean, this is more of a, I don't even know, like a readable kind of story.
Yeah.
It doesn't focus on, and who knows, maybe it'll turn into that. But so far, it's focusing more, like I said, on his upbringing and then just the search for him that day and how the father in particular is feeling as the day is going on and questioning what has happened and you're worried about his son, but knowing that everybody is assuming that he's been involved in the shooting. So it's really good.
Well, that's cool because there are often books that are sort of focusing on anything sort of domestic mm-hmm. tends to be told from a woman's point
right.
of view. And so that's cool that it's from the father's point
yeah,
of view.
Yeah, it's a unique perspective. And the father that has raised him, not just the absent father or
right,
the father
yeah.
that was he's been around.
Right.
But yet there's that element of he's not sure that he was the best choice to
right.
have raised him, maybe.
Oh, that's really interesting.
All right, what are you reading right now?
So I just last night finished a book called The War of the Encyclopedists by Christopher Robinson and Gavin Kovite. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. And it's kind of hard to talk about. It's another alternating chapter book, but unlike the ones that we've talked about where it's looking at the past and the present, it's two stories that are happening at the same time. So they're parallel stories. So the book starts out, it's about two best friends, and they go by their last names, which are Corduroy and Montauk. And their names fit their personas because they're pretentious college hipsters. They live in Seattle and they throw these themed parties. So, and they call themselves the Encyclopedists as a result of these parties. So they're painted in this really kind of horrible light at the beginning of the book. And that's, I'm not casting judgment on the pretentiousness of them or anything. That's very much how they're painted in the beginning, and that you're supposed to not like them from the beginning of the book. And they both sort of have this, they both are graduating from college and they sort of have this, they're too smart for their own good and they think that they're better than everyone else sort of mentality. So they both get into different grad schools in Boston, and so they're going to move to Boston and live together. But then Montauk is actually, he belongs to the National Guard, and so he's called up to go fight in Iraq, because as you find out through the book, this is actually 2005, and it's right smack in the middle of the war there. So you have these alternating chapters of him deploying and Corduroy staying in Boston and starting grad school. And they keep in touch with each other by editing a joint Wikipedia page about themselves. So instead of just, it's not like they write stories or they don't write kind of letters to each other, they write these paragraphs or these sections that are very philosophical and have these very deep things to say and sort of comment on situations that each other are going through by writing about them without actually writing about them, if that makes sense. So they just talk in generalities and more the concepts that go along with them. Corduroy struggles to find his place in grad school and kind of is having these existential crises all the time, while Montauk at the same time is facing actual danger in Iraq as he's fighting this insurgency. So there's this huge disconnect between their two realities, but they're each having this coming-of-age story at the same time. And I guess the sort of the message of the story is how reality makes you confront who you think you are when who you thought you were was smarter than everyone else and better than everyone else. And so this isn't I get really tired of books and movies. It seems like there are a lot of movies about this, in particular about young men who are finding themselves and sort of the path that they take in life and their coming of age story, but it usually is very self-serving, I think, and sort of applauds men for the choices they make. Whereas this book is sort of saying, you're all just kind of boys, even though you think that you're acting like adults. So it's sort of an interesting perspective, and it talks a lot about disillusionment and how adulthood is really just exercise in disillusionment, which is an interesting perspective to me. And I also like that they make the women in the book they're two female characters that intersect with both of their lives. And they are really well fleshed out characters. They're not just there to be sort of puppets for whatever the men want to have happen. They have their own lives. So And the book is actually written by two friends whose lives mirror these characters.
Oh.
So Robinson went to grad school, and Cobite is a lawyer with the army and actually fought in Iraq during 2005. So they each wrote their own sections and then
combined
them into a book. So
yeah.
It's a not really the typical book that I read,
really?
But it was really an interesting book. So.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it just came out probably last week, I want to say.
Okay.
So it's good.
Hot up the presses.
Yes.
Fabulous. All right, so let's wrap this up here because we keep having technical difficulties and we want to make sure we are able to finish it.
Okay. So should we do our title recap?
Yes.
Okay.
My books were Reconstructing Amelia by Kimberly McCrate, The Kind Worth Killing by Peter Swanson, We Were Liars by E. Lockhart, and what I'm reading right now is Finding Jake by Brian Reardon.
Okay. And my books were Elizabeth is Missing by Emma Healy, Luckiest Girl Alive by Jessica Knoll, The Furies by Natalie Haynes, and what I'm reading right now is The War of the Encyclopedists by Christopher Robinson and Gavin Coite. If you want to keep in touch with us, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or on your other podcatcher of choice. We welcome all feedback. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. Thank you all for listening and happy reading.